The headlines in media outlets in other parts of the country kept saying that Oregon had decriminalized some drug possession offenses, like you'd get a ticket instead of a jail sentence. That's not quite what happened. But the Oregon legislature did make a move already undertaken by California voters a few years ago and turned a number of drug possession felonies into misdemeanors. The bill has yet to be signed by the governor, but her signature is expected. Now, these are still considered crimes, but lesser crimes with lesser penalties. The idea is to focus less on punishment and more on treatment. The change in Oregon has the support of police chiefs and sheriffs up to a point. Let's find out what that point is. Chris Allison is the police chief in Central Point and is here talking for her own purposes and also as a member of the Association of Chiefs of Police. Chris Allison, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
We also have with us Phil Battine, who's the chief programs officer at Addictions Recovery Center, often known as the ARC in Medford. Phil, good to see you.
Good to see you, Jeffrey. Thanks.
And also to point out, Chief Allison is also a board member at Addictions Recovery Center as well.
Yes.
So it seems a little unusual to have police organizations supporting lighter sentences. What is the genesis of the movement toward turning what were drug possession felonies into drug possession misdemeanors?
Well, I think as the Oregon Chiefs of Police, I'm actually on their executive board. When we saw this bill coming down, we were really concerned about them decriminalizing all of drug offenses. And we wanted to be able to be at the table. And this was something that we negotiated in good faith. But we definitely have some concerns about unintended consequences.
What are some of the reasons that you can see before we get to the unintended consequences as looking favorably upon this? I mean, what are some of the reasons for wanting to go for some drug possession offenses as misdemeanors instead of felonies?
Well, I think that the intent and the purpose of this bill was really based on racial profiling. And so what it was is to eliminate any potential perceptions of racial profiling in sentencing. So that's really what we looked as a favorable, but I'm just not sure that this is quite how we needed to get there.
So are there particular things in this bill, and the major bill we're talking about is House Bill 2355, are there provisions in there that say you get this if you also get drug treatment? I mean, are there specific attachments there that indicate a path toward drug treatment?
Well, we were hoping so, but we really didn't see that come into play. And that's where we're talking about those unintended consequences. Because when you did have these higher penalties, we really were able to have some leverage with people of getting them into recovery. We have amazing drug courts. We have those type of programs that are set up. And those were those things that we really wanted to be placed in the bill. And we didn't see the emphasis put into this bill on that.
So is the concern then that people will sort of nominally say, yeah, sure, I'll go to drug treatment, and there's no particular sting to get them or no particular stick to get them into that treatment?
Yes, and that truly is the concern, because I think that a lot of times it's lost that these type of penalties really get people into recovery centers. And again, being a board member of the ARC, that's where we're seeing that. Not only my experience there, but my experience on the street. When people are struggling in addiction, sometimes they need that push. They need that ability to get into these programs. And I think we really do a fantastic job without having to lower these penalties.
So that brings us to the ARC, and Phil Battine can talk about the programs there. I mean, how big a set of people do you serve, and through how many different kinds of programs?
Well, the ARC's been in the Rogue Valley for about 50 years, starting Grants Pass as a vet's alcohol and drug treatment program. And to talk about our programs, we have a really comprehensive model of treatment. We're the only medical model detox south of Eugene, where we serve up to 12 clients there. We have a residential program that can serve 25 clients. Our outpatient programs were somewhere around 400 clients in that program. We have transitional housing for people. We just passed the 100 mark in employees at the ARC. And so we are expanding and growing all the time. And you know, some people say, well, that might not be a good thing that a drug treatment program is expanding and growing. But the good thing is, or the bad thing is, that we're still not meeting the need in this community to treat alcoholics and addicts who need and want to change their life. We don't have capacities to do that. And I think that's statewide and maybe nationally we know the same things, that that when you look at the need and then you look at the resources to treat that need, there's a disparity that's just, the gap is pretty incredible. And so as much as we try to accommodate and grow, we continue to be behind the curve in treating addiction in the Rogue Valley and alcoholism in the Rogue Valley. So it's an ongoing struggle. There's lots of providers in the Valley, and we all work together, and we all do a really good job, but we all have the same problem. We don't have enough resources to treat these people now.
How much bigger do you think you need to be? 25%, 50%?
You know, I don't know what the number is. I figured that if everybody in the Rogue Valley that needed alcohol and drug treatment, if you figured 10% of the population of the Valley, that we would probably be having groups in a stadium somewhere.
Wow.
You know, and that's the scope of the problem, that there's a lot, that there's a huge culture out there of addicts and alcoholics who are going untreated because they can't get into services, either through because of financial restraints or family restraints or access restraints. We have a walk-in clinic where we're working on a solution for it, but we have to turn people away almost every day that are self-referred, court-referred, DHS-referred, and we don't have the capacity to see them and then the capacity to treat them. We are expanding. We do have a new facility over on East Main. That's a 17,000-square-foot facility that we're getting ready to move into, and that will allow us to offer a lot more services and kinds of services. And Chris was talking about drug courts. We recently took over the contract for the family court, for the drug court, and she was talking about leverages into treatment, and those are good leverages into treatment and give people an opportunity to take an action to put their disease in remission and truly maybe get their lives back. And we see that all the time, that we have very successful people coming through our program. Do all of them do that? No. But the ones that want it can change their lives by coming to an alcohol and drug treatment program. And the ARC is kind of we consider ourselves kind of a gold standard. We do the right thing for the right reason. We have good people. We have good programs. And so if people can get to us by whatever means, it doesn't matter how they get to the door, just that they get to the door, whether it's through a court system, a self-referral, a work referral, a family referral. It doesn't matter how you get there. It just matters what happens once you get there. And we think once they get to our front door, they're going to be treated with dignity and respect, and they're going to receive a treatment service that will be beneficial to them.
Phil Bettine is the Chief Programs Officer at the Addictions Recovery Center, which is more commonly called ARC. Chris Allison is the Chief of Police in Central Point. We're talking about Oregon drug crimes getting reclassified from felonies to misdemeanors, primarily by House Bill 2355, awaiting the governor's signature. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So what I'm hearing from the bill, Chief Allison, is that we lower the offenses in the hopes of getting people treatment instead of jail time, but I'm hearing from the treatment community that there's not much capacity there. Is there a funding mechanism within this bill to increase capacity for treatment?
We didn't see that. We didn't see enough. Mm-hmm. There was negotiations that they were going to look at that, and I think that's where those unintended consequences and those disappointments came with this bill, that we didn't see that because, just as Phil is saying, is that we need more resources. We need resources. And for this to work as it was intended, or at least how it was told that it would, we're not seeing that. And the other thing that I did want to point out is that with this bill, House Bill 2355, you also had the passage of House Bill 3078, which also is lowering sentences for certain property crimes. So, you know, historically, we do know that you do have a nexus between property crimes and drug offenses. Just when someone is in the throes of addictions, a lot of times they're committing property crimes to feed that addiction. So this recipe that you have with House Bill 2355 and House Bill 3078, I think that's a really bad recipe, and you're going to see an increase in criminal activity throughout the Rogue Valley and throughout the state.
How many of the people, though, who might Well, let me ask it in terms of what currently exists. I mean, do people who get arrested on possession offenses and jailed awaiting trial with those as felonies, do some of them get early release pretrial anyway simply because of jail overcrowding?
Sure. Mm-hmm. That definitely is a problem. I think that we've heard that. That's kind of been a narrative that we've heard throughout the Rogue Valley just because of the inefficiencies right now of our jail because of how small it is. And I think that we're looking to correct those issues. I know that the sheriff is looking at options to get a bigger jail. But now you've actually put more of a emphasis with these two House bills that we're going to need to keep people into incarcerated if you're not wanting them to do the property crimes and you're not getting them into recovery. So there's so many different components that are going on now that have been introduced where we haven't even really been able to address the problems prior to this.
So Phil Bettine, you mentioned a contract with Family Court at ARC. So is there a direct pipeline from the legal system to treatment?
For certain people that have DHS involvement and maybe
that's
have
Department of Human Services or cases like foster children, things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, or their children are in jeopardy or something mm-hmm. like that because of choices they've made around addiction. And so we have a program that allows them and it's basically set to be a 13-month program, but I think the average stay is going to end up being about 18 months where they are with us in treatment and we are working on giving them life skills and the capacity to make choices that allow them to be clean and sober and then helping them develop life skills that allow them to be successful with their families and with their kids and with their community. And that's that's a long-term process. It's a process that's really never completed. It's a learning model that they will be learning the rest of their lives, but we give them a good start through the programs we have. And so, yeah, we do have that connection now. We're excited to be working with this population, and we have spent a lot of time and effort developing programs that will allow them to be successful in their endeavors to get their families and their kids back together.
But you mentioned a program that's geared for 12 to 14 months and generally takes about 18, which raises the question, how often does drug treatment take the first time? It is usually a relapse and retry kind of thing?
Well, we know that relapse is part of relapse is actually part of the definition of the disease of addiction. That we assume that some people are going to relapse and they will have multiple treatment attempts, and I think the statistics say that the average person has 7 treatment encounters before they actually get clean and sober.
7, okay.
And so it takes multiple exposures sometimes. Some people get it the first time. Some people are ready to change. And Alice and I were talking, Chris and I were talking about it before we came in here. And we know with some of the brain research that's going on that the cerebral cortex really doesn't get anywhere until it's 25 or 30 years old, and that's a rational, reasonable part of our brain. And that's when we see a lot of these people making changes, when they're in their mid-20s to mid-30s and their brain is finally caught up with their life, and they're taking a look and they're saying, if I keep doing the same things, I'm going to keep getting the same results. I also want to talk a little bit about the law. And I wanted to put it into context. There was an old mental health theory that I really liked years and years ago, and I've been doing this work for 30 years, but this is from the Wayback Machine. It was called the theory of cognitive dissonance, and what it stated is that behavior will continue until the negative consequences outweigh the positive rewards. And so if the negative consequences aren't there to extinguish the behavior, and the example I'll give is I was a runner for a lot of years, and I finally quit running when they had to put titanium knees, give me 2 new titanium knees.
Yeah,
when
I figured this was a knee story. Yeah,
when it hurt so bad I couldn't do it anymore, that's a negative consequence. It's the only thing that got me to stop running. And addiction is the same way. If there's no consequences for your addiction or a high enough level of consequences to get your attention to say, hey, maybe I need to do something, then we might not see as much access. And I think Chris, again, is right. I haven't seen anything in a bill that it's not like a DUI diversion program where first offenders get a diversion, and if they complete the diversion, it's off their record. I don't see that in the bill. I wish it was in the bill that part of you get a $100 ticket and you have to go be it. Not everybody that gets a possession charge is an addict or an alcoholic. Probably, again, 10 to 15%. So, but at least go get an assessment and follow follow the treatment plan of a treatment program if they determine that you meet criteria for some kind of substance use disorder.
All right, well, substance use disorders and addictions and criminal penalties are what we're talking about here in the Jefferson Exchange, because Oregon House Bill 2355 reclassifies a number of drug possession offenses from felonies to misdemeanors. You're hearing from Phil Bettine, who's the Chief Programs Officer at Addictions Recovery Center, or ARC, in Medford. Chief Chris Allison is with the Central Point Police and also on the Executive Board of the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police. Get your thoughts on this. What do you think about the idea of reclassifying drug possession crimes from felonies to misdemeanors? Where is the upside? What's the downside for you? 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. So I hear from both of you, you would have preferred to see a few more things in here. Chief Allison, I want to ask you about how carefully the line was massaged, if in your perception it was at all, figuring out where to draw the line, either in drugs or in extent of use of drugs or amount of drugs, where the line was found between some things staying as felonies and some becoming misdemeanors.
So that's a good question. I don't know that we have a lot of background on that. That's kind of one of the questions that we have, is where were those lines drawn, and what made one PCS conviction now that was a felony, now a misdemeanor. What we do know is that we're talking a lot about user amounts, and that hasn't even been defined yet. We do know that the Oregon State Police Crime Lab is actually going to be defining for us what a user amount is, and we don't have that yet.
So there's rulemaking involved in addition to what's in the bill. So
correct.
We have administrative rules that supplement the actual statute.
Correct. And a lot of those we haven't been educated on, and I don't believe that we've seen that they've even been decided.
Mm-hmm. Is this then primarily motivated by the desire just not to have that many people in prison?
I really think that the motivation was the racial profiling component, which I think is important. I mean, I don't think there's anybody who is right now going to say that that's not an important piece of this. I think we could have gotten there in a better way. I think we could have had more analysis of what we're doing with our state population, with our demographics. But that's really what I see coming from this bill, and that's what they were trying to have a remedy for. And, in my personal opinion, I don't think we hit the mark. I think with the Oregon Chiefs of Police, we supported the bill in hoping that we were going to get there without the reduction of the drug offenses. That didn't happen. And then when we saw House Bill 3078 come into play, it was disappointing for us.
3078, again, is the one dealing with property crime.
Correct.
Penalties, and those are dropping as well, you're saying.
Yes.
All right. And does that deal with property crimes just straight up, or property crimes involving
There's different ones, but it eliminates mandatory sentence for certain property crimes where the defendant has a prior property crime conviction. And what in law enforcement, what we look at that is that repeat property crime offender, we usually had mandatory minimum sentences, and that usually kept someone off of out of the cities where we could, technically have them where they weren't doing the property crimes. So with this bill, we're having this, it's almost like a double-edged sword where we're having both of these things coming into play, and I'm not sure that we're going to see what the intent of this bill was really geared towards or sold as.
Let's take some phone calls here. Here's a call from Alex in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Central Point Police Chief Chris Allison and Phil Bettine from ARC. Alex, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. Hey, it's obvious that the devil is in the details on these things, and it's too bad they don't iron them out ahead of time. But I wanted to throw something on the table here. I'm sure you're familiar that Portugal decriminalized all drugs some years ago. And on net, it seems to have worked out well. There hasn't been any flood of drug abuse. There's been a very slight decrease in the number of young people getting involved with drugs. But when the one of their head enforcement officers there was asked, would that work in the USA, he said, not by itself, that if you don't have the social support and opportunities in life for the people who otherwise are going into drugs, he doesn't think it would work.
Okay.
And so I guess my question is, and my statement is, seems like these things are nibbling around the edges, and that unless the entire social environment that leaves young people feeling that their best immediate option is using drugs in a way that doesn't serve them, that this is what my engineering professor would call making good rubber gloves to address the issue of leaky pens. He says that's not good engineering.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for the analogy, Alex. I'm going to get some responses because we're getting short on time here. So, Chief and Phil, any thoughts on what you heard there?
Well, I think socioeconomic stuff certainly has a part of addiction, Alex. And I think, and we were talking about Norway earlier, who has also decriminalized drug crimes and what's happened over there, and I think on some level that it's that an intended or unintended consequences and who benefits from it.
Let's get Chief Allison's comments.
Yeah, so you know what? I actually looked at what Alex just minimally what he was talking about, and I agree with him. Without the funding of these addiction recovery with your social component, decriminalizing is not going to be as successful as what you're seeing in Norway, Portugal, in Denmark, and all of these different countries. And so now you're comparing apples to oranges. So we have to have the full package, and we can't just do one thing and think that it's going to be successful. We really need to take a hard look at it and not just pass things without a lot of thoughtful evaluation.
We will look down the road and see what the results are of House Bill 2355, which changes the classification of some drug possession crimes from felonies to misdemeanors in Oregon. Chief Chris Allison from Central Point and Phil Bateen from ARC, thanks for joining us.